Hello, I'm Julian Morrow. Welcome to the Roundtable. The 24th of February 2022 is a date that will live in infamy in the history of Ukraine and of Europe as the day that Vladimir Putin's Russia invaded its neighbour, a nation of 44 million people that's been an independent democracy for 30 years since the Soviet Union dissolved back in 1991. On the Roundtable today, we bring you a conversation that was recorded with three people in Ukraine on the morning Russia's full-scale invasion began. And so what was going to be a broader discussion about life in Ukraine, its troubled democracy and its even more troubled relations with Russia became a snapshot of the shocking realisation that a war for the very existence of Ukraine, the greatest threat to security in Europe since World War II, had begun. Our guests on the roundtable are Andriy Kolobov, Secretary General at the National Youth Council of Ukraine. Andriy lives and works in Kyiv, the capital, as does Victoria Vidovichenko, Associate Professor in the Faculty of International Relations and Law at Boris Grinchenko Kyiv University. We're also joined by Australian photojournalist Bryce Wilson, who's been covering Ukraine since 2015. He was in the Ukraine-controlled town of Kramatorsk in Donetsk, the administrative unit of the Donbass region in the east of the country, near the front line of the self-proclaimed People's Republic of Donetsk. This conversation was recorded just hours after the Russian invasion began, amid, as you'll hear, the shock and confusion of a terrible new reality. I started by asking Victoria Vidovichenko how she found out that the war had begun.
My colleague called me on phone because normally at night I'm switching off all of the means of communication, you know. So he called me at 6 a.m. just saying it started. So I need to take care also of my team and, of course, taking security measures for my family as well for a moment. And it was really hard, especially for some of us who have parents from different cities or even in the same city, there were troubles with the connection. I received many, many calls from my international friends who've seen already the news and just wanted to check out whether the information was correct or not, because they couldn't believe it was happening. And actually, none of us was believing that the attack's going to start with the Kharkiv, Kyiv, some of the military bases near the Kyiv, and some for the attacks near the Odessa as well for a moment. We were thinking it only will be localized in the Donbass area. So for a moment, that's how the morning started. And each and every half an hour, we are checking with our teams how the situation is going. Some of my colleagues already checked the evacuation zones, and some of them are taking the measures to the safety zones as well with their families. For a moment, all of the roads out of Kyiv are stopped because of the traffic jams.
Yes, thank you very much, Victoria. Bryce Wilson, if I could come to you. We spoke to you last week in eastern Ukraine. Where are you now, and what are you seeing?
I'm on the ground in Kramatorsk, so I must tell you, this morning, I woke up, someone contacted me and told me that Putin was making this speech. Immediately after the declaration of war, bombs landed outside of my apartment. This was at something like 4:30 in the morning. I understood that this was the war now. I had to go and meet one Australian guy here and bring him back to my apartment because we were concerned that the phone lines would go down. On the way, I observed fighter jets in the air in this area. They're dropping bombs in Kramatorsk. A hypersonic missile flew over the top of me and many other civilians and targeted an airfield near here. Like, people, there are so many people in the streets withdrawing money from ATMs and preparing. But more crazy, when I was live streaming this morning just after the attack started, and I interviewed one woman and she was going to work like this was all normal. Like, I can't believe it's so surreal to me that people are only reacting to these events now, like as if there hasn't been warning for weeks. It's like even the bomb shelter situation here, people couldn't go in the bomb shelters because they were locked and the people that had the keys were away on holiday or at work. Like, this events are so crazy. I'm with other colleagues here, and we are discussing our evacuation plan to go back to Kyiv. But as people are saying, there is war all over Ukraine. Cities all over Ukraine are being attacked by the Russian Federation. This war is real. I can't stress this enough. People are saying that this is some false flag thing. It's not real. It's a psyop. For lack of a better term, that's complete bullshit. I was nearly killed today by an incoming artillery round. I cannot believe this is happening in Ukraine right now.
Bryce, have you heard what the local authorities have said to the people where you are?
No, I haven't, because truthfully, my concern most recently has been getting to safety. I'm with some mates here. I'm like thinking about their well-being. I haven't had a chance to even know, like, through working here, I have a very good understanding of what has happened in Donbass and throughout Ukraine. I don't even know the situation on the front line. I don't know the situation in the cities. I haven't had a chance to catch up on this news, aside from little bits and pieces that I've seen.
Thank you so much, Bryce. Andriy Kolobov, we've heard already a mix of shock, but also from many a sense of resignation that things might happen. What has been your reaction?
My morning started with the call. Also, my colleagues with whom we worked all night long until like 2 o'clock for the conversation about possible kind of negotiation sanction on Russian Duma in Council of Europe or other structures to ensure that we could stand for our position. But then in the morning, I wake up because of the call and also signals because of the threat and kind of air attack. And I just woke up in the office because I get a nap on a couch, and then I moved to the friend's apartment nearby where a bomb shelter exists in the house to ensure safety and that we could continue our work and continue our communication for supporting Ukraine. But in any case, situation is really shocking. On the way, I saw a lot of cars and also kind of buses, which is responsible for the mobilization of people from city to city, but they also stand in a queue for petrol or for the gasoline. And it's mean that it's also will be problems for intercity connections. And a lot of people are moving with the luggage or backpacks to leave, but it's not very clear where the people could go. The municipal community of Kyiv mentioned that it's better to stay at home if it is not necessary to go somewhere else. But at the same time, within the news, it's a lot of information that attack was for the military infrastructure and that the infrastructure is all over the Ukraine and all over the Kyiv. But it's complicated to confirm because at the same time, people are really worrying. I know that a lot of organizations are going to buy some food and some preparation for communication within the radio system because it's the threat that online communication and cell phone communication would be broken at some moment. We also saw that in Moldova, they heard some noise of bomb attacking, and probably some of the western border are also not safe. It's why we don't know how to proceed. And yes, at the current stage, I'm sitting at home, and I'm not sure should I move or not move. Probably at current stage, I will be at home until we'll get any information.
Thank you, Andriy. Okay, it seems that we've lost Victoria Vidovchenko and Bryce Wilson. Obviously, the situation in Ukraine at the moment, very, very challenging. Andriy, you're still obviously dealing with this shocking information. The people that you're working with, have you been in contact with your colleagues, and do you have a sense of how they are reacting and whether they are looking to evacuate as well?
No, at current stage, everyone's sitting at home and not discussing any evacuation. In social media, we try to be brave and sure that Ukraine will win and situation will be solved. But how to move, everyone don't know the situation and all of the people from our team don't know. But what is my plan is I encourage them to continue our work and to discuss our further statement and request for international community to influence Russia or to influence Russian stakeholders to block their military intervention to all territory of Ukraine.
We've got Bryce Wilson back. Bryce, thanks very much for speaking with us again. You said earlier that your initial thought was to evacuate to Kiev, but that is now up in the air. What other options are there if you have to leave Kramatorsk?
To be honest, I'm not... The situation is so fluid and dynamic that we could be driving and get killed. So I don't really know what our options are at the moment. I came here voluntarily. I believe in the independence of Ukraine. I cannot believe these events have occurred, but right now my main priority is looking out for my mates and looking out for myself so that we can continue reporting about this situation. So I understand that many cities in Ukraine are being attacked by the Russian Federation. It seems like nowhere that we have the potential to go will truly be safe. But what I do know is the front line is something like 30 kilometers from here. They are shooting rockets at this city. They're firing artillery at this city. This place now is not safe, but I also understand other places in Ukraine aren't safe. It's just a better of two evils, essentially.
On the roundtable, we are discussing the invasion of Ukraine by Russian forces on the morning that it has begun. We heard there from Andriy Kolobov, Secretary General at the National Youth Council of Ukraine. We also heard from photojournalist Bryce Wilson in Kramatorsk in the contested Donetsk region of eastern Ukraine. And unfortunately, Bryce has had to leave us. He's just let us know that the location where he is no longer safe and he has to move. So obviously we wish him all the best. Earlier, we were speaking with Victoria Vidovichenko in Kiev. We also lost the line to Victoria. Such is the situation in Ukraine. But I believe we've got Victoria back now. Victoria Vidovichenko, are you there?
Yes, I'm here with you, colleagues.
We heard Andriy talking about the responses of Western governments to this crisis. What is your sense of the way the threats to Ukraine, which have escalated so dramatically in recent days, have been responded to by the international community?
What we need is a devastating sanctions on Russia now, including even the SWIFT system. So fully isolate Russia by all of the means in all of the possible formats. We definitely need the Western democracies for their army, for the support of the army, the weapons, the equipment. We definitely need the financial assistance and the humanitarian assistance, because that we do not know whether the critical infrastructure is only the initial step or not. Because we believe it's only the initial step. We do not know what will be the next actions, whether how our military experts are saying that it's going to stop for a moment. But to tell the truth, it's already the act of aggression, and the only condemnation is not enough. We need concrete action from the Western democracies now.
Do you have any sense yet of what the declaration of martial law means in terms of your options at this point, Victoria?
The martial law started to be operational just because the Verkhovna Rada is being working now. But in a nutshell, we know that we are we've been checking the evacuation posts and we are ready to do it. So we have our luggage being with us, with the light luggage, so-called, or the military luggage with us. So some of us are within the territorial defense. And of course, the first stage is that some of us will go to the territorial defense. Some of us are at home, so and continuing to work professionally, as, for example, my university colleagues are doing. So to tell the truth, there is no panic, and we definitely know what to do. The only thing we don't know what will be in Putin's next steps.
And Victoria, could you give us your sense of the sentiment of young people in Ukraine in this crisis about their nation, about relations with Russia and their attachment to democracy?
You know what I can say? The thing is that I think the Western democracies should think what is democratic, because you are not fighting for the democracy. We are fighting for the democracy each and every moment with some of our lives. And please, please do not take for granted the democratic values that you have, because we and freedoms, because we are fighting for them and we know the value of them. What I'm telling to my students and, of course, the colleagues with whom I'm talking, we are ready, we are resistant. We know what we want. We definitely want that in a peaceful way, but of course we are very much resistant and we will be resilient. If some of us would like to go to the territorial defense, we will be supporting. If some of us would like to continue, you know, kind of supporting the economy and making, because that's also important and that's also a part of the resilience, we will be doing that. And part of my job too will be to continue supporting the students, and I will be doing that with a great pleasure.
Andriy Kolobov, you are the Secretary General of the National Youth Council of Ukraine. For the people who are the members of the National Youth Council, how are they feeling today?
I can tell you regarding our night conversation before invasion started, because we had a conversation with different youth organizations all over Ukraine, also from Donetsk and Luhansk region. Some organizations, they really supporting the military troops of Ukraine to organize logistics, to support additional provisions. At the same time, we had also conversation with the Transcarpathian region, which is border to Hungary, to ensure that they, with the cooperation with Hungary, could stand for the Ukrainian sovereignty, because we saw how Hungary blocked EU sanctions against Russia and was not clear about position of supporting Ukraine. But we are trying to explain within our position that we are in Ukraine are ready to fight and communicate for independence of Ukraine against Russian aggression.
And Victoria, obviously, Ukraine has been a sovereign and independent nation for 30 years. On a personal note, can I just ask you, how do you feel about the situation that your nation faces today as Russia launches its invasion?
I must say again that we definitely feel that we are united. We definitely feel that panic is the least thing to do at this very moment. Of course, we should think about priority and safety measures for our families and friends. But at the same time, we are supporting each other as much as we can, because we call on the international community to act immediately. And of course, by calling that, we definitely have to be aware that we should be resistant to any kind of the way these days may go. Because we were predicting that the February 24th today would be the attacks on the Donbas, but we never been believing before it could be the attacks on any other of the cities, specifically to the capital. So therefore, I must say that only united and decisive actions from our side, but also united and decisive actions from the Western democracy side, can stop Vladimir Putin's aggression against Ukraine. But at the same time, doing what you are doing, asking to respond what's going on in Ukraine by the Ukrainians.
Victoria Vodyachenko, thank you so much for speaking with us on the roundtable.
Thanks so much. Thank you for this opportunity to be heard. And God bless us all.
And Andriy Kolobov, thank you also for joining us today.
Thank you so much. And we really hope for your support and for the acting of international community to take an action.
That was Andriy Kolobov, Secretary General at the National Youth Council of Ukraine, speaking to us from the Ukrainian capital, Kyiv. And before him, Victoria Vodyachenko, Professor in the Faculty of Law and International Relations at Boris Grinchenko University, also in Kyiv. That conversation was recorded on the 24th of February, just hours after the Russian invasion of Ukraine began. Earlier, we also heard from Australian photojournalist Bryce Wilson in Kramatorsk in the contested Donetsk region of eastern Ukraine. Kramatorsk was coming under fire, so Bryce had to leave the conversation for security reasons. 3 days into the war, we checked back in with Bryce. Bryce, when we spoke on the morning of the invasion, you were in Kramatorsk in the east, near what used to be called the front line. From your Twitter feed, it looks like you've been on the move since then. Where have you been and what have you seen?
Well, yeah, after we left Kramatorsk as a result of the invasion and the attacks there, I moved to central Ukraine with three other colleagues, my Australian friend and other media producer, Matt, and the Danish colleagues, Emil and Stefan, we went to Dnipro and we were trying to push as far west as possible, but we ended up having to stay there for a night. And then that next day I went and bought a car with Bitcoin because it's pretty much impossible to get cash here at the moment. And then Matt and I split up from Emil and Stefan because they went back to Donbass. And Matt and I drove from Dnipro yesterday to Vinnytsia, which is just south of Kyiv. And now we are very close to Lviv in the far west of Ukraine.
Have you seen evidence of Russian military action as you've been traveling?
I believe, on reflecting on this a couple of days later, it was yesterday, but we saw two trucks carrying infantry that had camouflage markings, which I hadn't observed on any of the Ukrainian armed forces vehicles. After looking at some of the other vehicles that have been captured or destroyed by the armed forces of Ukraine, I think it's very probable that we saw Russian military hardware moving between Dnipro towards Kyiv. So it was very quick. There was only two trucks, but there's a lot of stuff in that area, so it makes sense.
Bryce Wilson, what are you seeing in terms of evacuations by the people of Ukraine?
We've seen, I guess, tens of thousands of cars. Something like 100,000 people have already fled as a result of this conflict. I've seen a number of car accidents. People are driving very erratically to get to the border as quickly as possible. I saw one man who I believe had died as a result of a car accident. He was just on the ground, burned out trucks. I don't know if that was related to this exodus, but it was a very haunting section of the trip where there was just damaged and abandoned cars and severe, just extreme signs of like accidents and damage.
Mm. Do you have a sense of the mood and morale of Ukrainians as you travel west?
The armed forces of Ukraine have been winning a lot of the fights they've been in. They've taken losses and there have been killed and wounded soldiers, of course. But it really does seem like morale-wise, on the ground, people are pretty upbeat. This morning when we were in Vinnytsia, there were air raid sirens going off and one family allowed us into their air raid shelter. It was their basement. They gave us food, tea, apples to bring with us on our journey today. And they were talking to us about everything that was going on. And they were quite upset, of course, by the fact that their country was being invaded. But they had this belief that the military wasn't going to lose and that Kyiv would not fall.
And what's their sense of the way the international community has reacted to this invasion? Do Ukrainians feel abandoned?
Yes, that exact same family said that. People in Ukraine feel abandoned from what we've spoke to them about. There's definitely a sentiment that they're like basically left to defend their country from one of the world's largest superpowers on their own. Missiles are hitting civilian buildings in the city. There are war crimes taking place. This country is defending itself on its own. The weapons that have been supplied are obviously helping them a lot. They're dealing a lot of damage, but I think more will be required if Ukraine is to remain independent.
And just finally, Bryce Wilson, have you made a decision personally about what you're going to do and whether you're going to remain covering Ukraine?
Right now, the main thing I'm looking forward to is arriving in Lviv and having a good night's sleep, because since the invasion started, I've probably had 3 good hours of sleep a night. We've driven something like 20 or 24 hours in the last 2 days. It's my intention to keep covering the conflict, and I would like to remain in Ukraine, but it remains to be seen what will happen with the invasion.
Well, Bryce Wilson, thank you for your coverage. Thank you for speaking with us again, and stay safe. We wish you all the very best.
Cheers. Appreciate it. Thank you for your time.
We also spoke again with Victoria Vodovchenko in Kyiv on the third night of the war, with Russian forces surrounding the capital and the city under curfew. Victoria Vodovchenko, thanks very much for speaking with us again. Can you tell us what you've experienced in Kyiv since the first morning of the invasion?
It's the third day, and I'm really proud to be Ukrainian, being resistant, being doing what I can with much of my dignity, with much of my expertise. And each and one is feeling so much of unity, and we are doing as much as we can. So for a moment, of course, it's a very heavy situation in Kyiv. Of course, we are grateful for being alive to our armed forces and the territorial defense forces as well. Now we cannot go out of the shelter just because there are going to be a cleaning of the streets. The issue that is the same issue, it's heavy situation in Kharkiv on the east, very heavy on Chernihiv as well on to the north. Very heavy situation in Kherson, which is the one with the basement with the clear water to Crimea, and that there were a lot of attempts of the missiles to attack that. For a moment, the Chernobyl atomic station is being controlled by Russians, and Chernobyl atomic station is only 70 kilometers from Kyiv, and we really don't know what's going on there. Within Kyiv, today we had two missile attacks attacking the dormitory quarter, and for a moment there are many injured, but majority of the people are within the shelters. There were also attacks on the emergency AR machines, who were transporting the wounded people to the hospitals. Unfortunately, one of them was hijacked and the patient was dead for a moment. The doctors are trying to save life of the driver. At the same time, we are very much thankful so much for the Australian people, but many, many nations who are trying to do as much as they can in order to support our nation. We do ask you to support us in the appealing to close the sky of Ukraine. It's very much important because we want to at least to stop the bombings and the shellings happening on the many, many cities of Ukraine, even on the western part of Ukraine. And we will be staying strong as much as we can. And there is no panic or chaos. There are some people who are trying to move from the cities to the west, and there are huge lines on the borders with Moldova, with Romania, with Hungary, with Slovakia, and of course with the Poland. But of course the majority is staying with their own premises and their own houses. So definitely it's the sign that we are very much resistant and we want to defend our own land.
And Victoria, what impact have President Zelensky's communications had on morale?
He's our hero, and I think it's one of the heroic presidents of actually of all of the nations, because he's standing, he's not evacuated, he's standing in Kyiv, he's standing with his advisors, they're working 24/7, and everyone is doing its own job with the armed forces and with the territorial defense and a lot of the volunteers. The blood centers are full of blood because there are queues of the people who will be willing to give their blood in order to support the hospitals and the medical institutions. We have a lot of volunteers who would like to become the so-called reservists and the territorial defense representatives together with the volunteer battalions. We are very happy and we are very strong and we'll keep doing that.
You mentioned the volunteers for the territorial defense battalions. The government, Victoria, has also ordered a general mobilization and men aged 18 to 60 are prohibited from leaving Ukraine. Are ordinary Ukrainians
now,
accepting of that?
The majority of Ukrainians are accepting that because some of them, they are kind of evacuating wives and children and then turning back to defend the country. There are the male representatives from the western part of Ukraine who are now coming to the central part, especially to Kyiv, to support. Of course, there is some percent of those who are unhappy for many reasons, and it's fine, but we are a democratic country in war. For the third day, we experienced the aggressive actions for another country who attacked our sovereignty, our territory, our land, and our lives.
And Victoria, given the encroachment of Russian forces around Kyiv, are you optimistic that the capital can be held?
You know, it's a very difficult situation because I think a very heavy fight will be tonight and tomorrow. We hope and we do believe in that Kyiv will resist and it definitely will resist as well as any other city. It's very hard because there are wounded, and we do understand there are going to be more of the people, of the civilians being wounded, because you cannot be protected when the missiles are attacking your apartments. So definitely there are desertees being within the cities, and it's and therefore we have to stay in the shelters in order to make and support our army to do their own job.
Well, we wish you and everyone in your city and country every safety and success. Victoria Vodovchenko, thank you so much for speaking with us again.
Thank you.
Victoria Vodovichenko is Associate Professor for the Faculty of International Relations and Law at Boris Grinchenko Kyiv University. And despite the truly terrible predicament that Victoria, Andriy and her fellow Ukrainians find themselves in, there is much to admire about the way Ukraine is facing this awful situation. And we do hope that peace and justice will return to Ukraine, however long that may take. I'm Julian Morrow. Thanks for listening.